The Midweek Drive and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Two radio shows you can enjoy live, online and around the world from sironline.co.uk.
And they can also join the delightful Professor David Slight. David, I finally feel as though, well, I can now sort of move on to a whole new world, basically, because we finally got you in the studio. As I was saying to Jeff Thompson this morning on his breakfast show, we're halfway there. It was about 14 months ago we did the feature with yourself on the train, the first direct train from Lincoln to London. And we said there we needed to coordinate it, and here you are. Marvellous.
Here we are. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for your patience.
It's always very important. For the benefit of the dear listener, Professor Slight is the Dean of Faculty of the Media, Humanities and Performance area these days. There are so many changes in terms of acronyms, it's always very confusing about this whole setup. But I know, Cameron, it's important in Nashville that we get titles appropriately addressed. Isn't that right?
No, not so much. Hey, you is pretty much...
You see, the informality of the Canadian educational system, David, is all we can say.
Very, very comfortable, Cameron.
It's all sorted through on that particular basis. Okay, so let's just start off with the whole thing. I'll go over to yourself, Cameron. Cameron, any questions you'd like to ask Professor Slight about his role with the BBC? Because he spent over 20 years with the corporation before becoming an ace, an editor extraordinaire, and then deciding to cross over into the delights of academia, produce a whole range of other factors as well. A very passionate believer, I think, in local media, and indeed Nottingham. I mean, from the inaugural address, I seem to recall, David, you're very proud to promote Lincolnshire, the East Midlands, mentioned Nottingham, yes, well, they're connected as well, let's say, from that point of view. So, Cameron, any initial questions you want to put before, of course, we feature your country music choice for this week?
Yeah, I've been hearing about cuts with the BBC, and do you think that they have been fulfilling their kind of promise of performance from a local aspect accurately?
So that nice, easy question to start off there, David.
Fantastic question. Well, absolutely. Let's dive in. I think under the recent leadership of the recent Director General, they have been desperately trying to move away from being a London-centric organisation, and the moving of 2,400 jobs from London to the new media city at Salford Quays is a significant attempt to try and reduce that reliance on London. Whether or not the impact in the local areas like Lincoln and Lincolnshire have been supported is more up for debate at the moment. I think it was clear a little while ago that there were proposals on the table that the local radio services run by the BBC would be slimmed back quite considerably in some cases. And there was quite a big outcry by the British public saying they really value their local radio. For us, that's BBC Radio Lincolnshire. And so the BBC Trust stepped in and told the BBC management, we don't think you should do this. So, yeah, there have been checks and balances on some of the management proposals to affect local and regional services.
It always get a comprehensive response from Professor Slight, I found, from that point of view. It's always crucial from that point of view. I would say it's a mystery, in other words. Cue Michael Logan, because it's time for David and Hannah, of course, to cast their critical ear over what is certainly a lot less upbeat than the exciting world of reality, which, of course, we had broadcast a couple of weeks ago, which was the whole routine. In fact, we'll dig out reality again, because we will be featuring Jessica one more time. Because she's going global, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Exactly.
We'll be looking for big things from her. But this week we're playing Michael Logan. Michael Logan is originally from Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, and he makes his home down here in Nashville right now. He also has had previous visits to the UK and Europe because he's a singer-songwriter, and he's actually going to be touring in the Netherlands in the fall or autumn. So that's pretty exciting for Michael. Big fan of David Gray. We were talking last week, and David Gray is one of my favorites as well. And he says that he got a chance to meet David, and that's really the kind of vein his music falls into. So this is from Michael's album from 2007. The album's called Things I Failed to Mention. This is a track called Mystery, Living Room Sessions on Siren FM.
the best Gloucestershire can provide. It's Hannah O'Brien and Natasha Turney on The Midweek Drive for Siren 107.3 FM.
No, thank you, Phil. I was saying a 50% success rate. Not bad, really, in its own way. Natasha, we hope you're well. I think she's back in Gloucestershire, is she not, Hannah?
I'm not actually sure. I just got a text this morning saying she probably wouldn't be here today.
That's probably okay. So maybe even listening online, it's okay. Katie O'Brien, Katie Grimason does, so it's a different line entirely. So, crucial time, Cameron. I can tell that from a Facebook update you're anticipating, you know, the result that might come through here. Whom would you like to hear the view from first? Would you like Professor David Slight, self-confessed Coldplay aficionado and key sort of person who loves this is a genre that sadly his son refers to as dad rock. Outrageous. I know. It's could be a honey thing. Or would you like to go to the finger on the pulse, end of her first year in journalism, undergraduate Hannah O'Brien?
I think we'll go with the professor because I'm having kind of, you know, the whole dad rock thing. I'm having kind of like an empathy thing going on. we were doing a record release party a couple of weeks ago and somebody came up to me because I'd introduced the act and they came up and said, "Are you Aaron's father?" Who was the lead singer from the band.
Yeah. He should have responded, "No, he's a grandfather. It's all genetics. You know, that's what it's all about."
We won't go there.
No, it's... Carry on. All right, so David, your thoughts on the Logan track there.
What a smashing track, Cameron. And I think you had me sold when you mentioned David Gray, because what a talented composer and singer he is. And I've had the great fortune to see him three times now. And in fact, he came here to Lincoln. We're so pleased. He came to Lincoln and played in the Engine Sheds. And capacity audience, it was a fantastic night. Wow. And what a star he is. But that was a lovely piece, and I think we were all agreeing. We were actually chilling and relaxing here to that, and really enjoying every moment.
Well, this could be crew. Hannah?
I thought it was a really lovely track, really soothing, and just like made you kind of chill out, just forget whatever's gone on that day.
Success, Cameron. It's hit both demographics equally. Fantastic. Well, yes, good stuff there. So, yeah, good news as far as that's actually concerned. So Michael Logan presumably doing a whole range of other sort of factors and will be available. It's nice to see, actually, that we had a couple of people who liked the fact that you were on Siren today, which was really sort of quite positive on that side of things. But I was always tempted to actually give a little name check to the other person who actually liked us through that. Charlie Girl Chamney, surely a made-up name, but never mind. Yeah.
She's a Canadian singer-songwriter.
Oh, do you see? Not a made-up name at all. You know, Charlie, wonderful. That's brilliant stuff. Okay, Hannah, you've been doing some Jessica Frex analysis. You've been checking out videos. You've been checking out YouTube's parodies, etc. What have you been doing, you know, so that Cameron knows that when Jessica joins us on the show next week, you know, you'll have done your research?
I was looking up the People of Walmart video, which is absolutely hilarious. I loved it. And then I found her Harry Potter parody, which I also loved because I love Harry Potter. And I was in creases. And her Black Friday night was also brilliant. I just think she's absolutely amazing.
So this is looking good.
Alicia Silverstone video is something you should see if you haven't found that one yet. It's parodying the fact that Alicia chews her food before giving it to her child. So that's a very funny video. A little disturbing, but
you know, I will look that one up. I've subscribed to her channel, so I'll be getting all the updates.
If your career encompasses Batgirl with George Clooney and Clueless, what else can you actually do? It's Alicia Silverstone, Red Lodge. David, I suspect you haven't encountered Jessica Freck before.
Do you know I haven't, and I'm feeling distinctly left out.
But what a way to impress the family when you go and start giving, you know, these are the kind of areas that...
My 13-year-old will lose the battle because I will say to him, I have some uber cool clips to look at.
Street cred will work through that, Cameron. Some little tips, a little aids of sort of, shall we say, study notes. Cameron McIntosh's, even Cameron Tilbury's study notes guide for Jessica Freck, for David, and indeed the listener who might not have encountered Jessica as yet.
Jessica is really just, she's an excellent example of how musicians can really build their success through the internet. She did the People of Walmart video, That was a huge success. She did People of Walmart 2, which was an even bigger success. Millions of hits between the two videos. And she started doing these kind of takeoffs, and she's done the Katy Perry spoof, the Alicia Silverstone spoof. But they're all very witty and clever, and to see her live, it's really something, too. She just has a way with her phrasing, and this album and single, we're hoping will do really well for her. She, out of the internet, out of these spoofs that she's done on YouTube, she's actually landed for this past Christmas a national TV commercial for Hyundai, and she's landed a Pepto-Bismol TV commercial as well. So she's really captured the imagination of the advertising world here through her music.
And as I said a couple of weeks ago when we first featured Jessica, it's a feel-good tune, which I feel could almost replace Jerusalem as a graduation theme, but maybe not. Just a thought. Perhaps not from that perspective. Still to come, Professor David Slide will be talking about Lincolnshire TV and some of the things that Lincolnshire TV may well be doing with respect to the Olympics. We'll be featuring our data protection expert, Susan Singleton. Keith Fottett will be talking about ninjutsu. Always, I think, vital for all deans of faculty to have some, at least a working knowledge of ninjutsu to deal with those instances where you just have to have a martial arts to hand. Then again, perhaps not. But those last two questions for your good self, Cameron, are going to be flown at you across the Atlantic, as we also sort of note that Ed Ringwald has also said that he likes this connection. So that's nice. Is he another country? Is he another country and western or country singer?
You wouldn't recognize the name Ed Ringwald, but you might recognize the name Pee-wee Charles, who was Gordon Lightfoot's pedal steel guitar player for about 18 years. And Ed is also in the band Western Swing Authority, which we've featured on the show here.
Absolutely, a true sort of giant of the whole routine, so clearly we need to. Well, thank you, Ed. We salute you. Anyway, last two questions, please. Hannah.
Cameron, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I certainly have.
And can we look forward to hearing from you again next week?
Looking forward to it, yes. Mm.
Are you ready for reality, David?
I'm ready.
What do you mean, David, about it being insufferably catchy?
Insufferably catchy.
Insufferably.
With the emphasis on...
Well, there we are, exactly. Just as well we're not having you on the show next week with Jessica Freck, but still, who knows? Anyway, challenges are there. Now, around about 72 hours or thereabouts, maybe slightly there, maybe 96 hours, Hannah, you're having your first ever Midweek Drive Siren 107.3 FM location report, together with, obviously, Natasha Turney, and indeed one of our graduates, Nicola Clancy. We did the thang, so to speak, at the Newark and Nottinghamshire Agricultural Society show. Yes,
we did.
We might well have a sort of clearing of one's throat from sort of various other things, because I had anticipated sort of roundabout into your third or fourth report from that point of view that you would actually be taking part in ninjutsu.
Yes, I was thrown unexpectedly into a ninjutsu lock kind of...
Yeah, arm twisted. You thought he was just shaking your hand. Unbelievable. So, Keith Fottett, BBD Sandan Shidoshi Ho expert in ninjutsu. Are you there? Can you explain yourself?
I am. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Keith.
First of all, I'm pretending I wasn't there.
I know. This is it. So how was Hannah as a subject to work with for the first ninjutsu expert? Because I know I got another email from you on the Monday saying you'd expect us to drop by on the Sunday as well. We were too frightened, Keith. You know, we thought we don't know what could happen in this particular routine.
Well, anyway. I tried to be gentle. But the wrist is okay anyway.
Yeah, it's fine.
But ninjutsu is the ancient Japanese warrior art of the ninja, culturally opposite to the elite samurai class of the day, and got a history of over 1,000 years, came out of Japan in 75 and came to the UK and Europe's shores in 75/83 to the UK, and we've now been going in Newark as a dojo for almost 22 years.
Which, you know, is quite stunning. David, I'm not sure whether you're similar sort of generation to myself where you think of the ninjas and you only live twice, amongst other things, and the ancient Japanese cult of the ninja warriors and so on.
Well, with a young child about 12 years ago, it's of course the ninja warriors, the little turtle creatures.
Well, not so little turtles,
which
really.
Which, yeah. I'm sure Keith must be fed up of the connection being made, but...
I think it's fair to say we saw the sort of ninja secretive agent scenario there. And indeed, it's also worth pointing out that Adrian Johnston, Chief Executive Officer of the Newark and Nottinghamshire Agricultural Society, was very keen to say, yes, Keith, he's always training businessmen how to actually deal with ninjutsus and such like stuff. I just think, again, David, different counties, what goes on?
Absolutely. we could do with some of that training in Lincolnshire.
There we are, Keith. So let's throw you the gauntlet, metaphorically speaking, about academics, who, you know, obviously we need to have fit academics, we need to be working through all sorts of things, etc. What sort of things would you say that, for instance, Professor David Slight might sort of consider if he sort of says, yeah, I think this would go down well, I'll float this past the VC's office, ninja training for all our staff?
Yeah, I mean, what we do, we created Zero Tolerance UK, and basically what that does is strips away the black garb, the mask, the swords and all the weapons and the history and the culture, and we teach self-defence, self-protection courses to the wider general public and corporate businesses and so forth. So, yeah, coming over to see you is quite a possibility from that perspective. The ninjutsu element of it is that obviously we train in black, as you saw us over the weekend, and we're taking the culture and the spirituality of everything very seriously, as one should. Should be remembered that it's not a contemporary martial system, and it's not sport orientated, and there's no competition. So, philosophically speaking, we have a mirror on our camisole, which is like a notice board, if you like, and all new students look through that, and what they see is who they train for. So they don't train for me, the instructor, they don't train for the parents or the schoolmates or the teachers, they train for themselves, and over a period of time they improve and gain confidence and learn new skills that they can carry about in life. And ninjutsu and the self-defense side is something that you can carry about for free, so it doesn't matter whether you're attacked in the street or bullied in the playground or whether you're away on business or overseas on a holiday beach somewhere, it's there with you, skills that you can carry around.
One of the things we didn't really touch upon when we did a feature with you on Saturday, Keith, was really how did you get involved with it yourself? So share with us your own journey, because it is interesting. Yeah, I can sort of hark back to the sort of martial arts of Kwai Chang Kane and the philosophy of Grasshopper. Again, I've suggested, I don't know why David's given me short shrift on this, that one possible route of graduation was to see when the student could actually snatch the pebble from our hand, then it would be time for them to leave or walk across rice paper without creating any sort of manifesto at all. Norman Cherry, equally Professor Cherry, I don't think he was well taken with that sort of thing. Astonishing, but there we are. It still goes into my sort of ideas box, Hannah. But from your own perspective, Keith, what was your own sort of journey that brought you to become an expert in this whole field?
Well, many years ago, I was a Venture Scout leader and I took a party of Venture Scouts to Dublin, or the Dunleary, I should say. But before that, we'd had some karate training, basically for one of our awards, which I'd organised, and I'd continued on for 3 years, but really got fed up and bored with it. And so I was reading a back issue of a martial arts mag just before going to Ireland, and there was a couple of paragraphs in it about what used to be called then the EBNS, the European Bojinka Ninjutsu Society, and the secretary lived in Dublin, so I gave him a ring and said I was due to come over, bring a party of Venture Scouts of 20. Is there anything he could do for us in terms of a night's activity, basically? And it took me many phone calls, including rowing across Dunleary Harbour when I got there to secure the Monday night, and all I got from him was, yeah, 7:30 tonight at Parnell Street in Dublin. See you then. Never been to Dublin before, didn't know how to get there, but, you know, that was part of the crusade, I suppose. And none of his instructors or students knew that we was attending. They let us in eventually, and they gave us an impromptu demonstration, a teaching, and a bit about the history and the culture of the ninja. And I thought, yeah, this is exactly what I'm looking for. Bearing in mind some of the activities I'd have pre-done with scouting and venture scouting, like field craft, survival training, horsemanship, I was already a first aider and a lifeguard and that sort of thing.
You're pretty boasting now, you know, just ease back on that, you know, please. You're making us feel inferior with the whole range of things from that point of view.
We contacted a local instructor who lived in Derby, and we had another session with him, and in the following January I started full-time in Nottingham. I had to travel every weekend, and after 5 years I was authorised to set up a dojo in the Newark area, and 21 and a half years on, we're still going and very strong with a membership of around 42 members now.
Absolutely. Now, I know we've spoken with Hannah and the team about getting the girls over to do some ninja training with you in many ways. I mean, are you still up for that, Hannah?
Yeah, definitely. I think it sounds brilliant.
I'll stick with my make-my-own pork sausage tarts, or indeed the classic notion of how to make your very own origami pig. It's from the Ladies in Pig scenario, which we also collected from the Newark and Knott Show. And I think they were going to be at Lincoln as well, so good news as far as that's concerned. Keith, did you manage to have a look around the show yourself during the actual time you were there, or were you sort of stuck with your demonstrations for the majority of the time?
We did six demonstrations, indoors and outdoors, over the weekend, so I didn't spread my wings very far. Mm-hmm. Somebody had to man the stall through the weekend. But many years ago, I mean, this is the fourth year now we've been at the show, and I have seen the show, basically, and not this weekend.
It's always improving. And plus, of course, you can always go online and listen to the coverage that we provided for the Midweek Drive and Siren 107.3 FM. As you say, all the bits and pieces are there. Were you happy with your own particular contribution to the whole thing?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, very much so. We had quite a number of responses. I suppose the acid test really is we can open the door, but you've got to walk through it. And over the next couple of weeks, you know, we'll see what members of the public do actually choose to walk through the door.
Could be a strap line for our open days here in many ways, though, couldn't it? University of Lincoln, we can open the door, but you've got to walk through it.
Yes, that's important.
Any questions you'd like to ask Keith yourself, David?
Yeah, I'm just fascinated, Keith, by the fact that you've 40. Did you say 42 people in the Newark area?
Yes, we have. Yeah.
That's a fantastic take up. And do you meet every week? Is it a weekly?
From 9 to the mid 50s.
Yeah. Oh, really? That's amazing.
I know. There's hope for us, yeah, isn't there?
No? There is. Absolutely.
It's all great stuff from that perspective. A web address, Keith, remind us, how do people actually, if they're listening to this on the drive time slot, how do they get in touch with you? I think, oh, I want to find out more about ninjutsu.
Right, well, you can check the website out at www.bvdnewark.co.uk, or you can email me directly on warrior.ninja@btinternet.com.
Splendid. Last two questions for Keith, please, Hannah.
Keith, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Very interesting.
And can we look forward to hearing from you again tomorrow?
Possibly tomorrow morning. I think we're doing that. We, when I spoke to Keith earlier, I have a suspicion I actually woke him up. You know, it was mid-afternoon. It was just a confirmatory call, but I got a sense that Keith, you know, I thought, oh, maybe he was actually in deep meditation. Yeah, it could be all sorts of things from that point.
Actual fact, I work for the local hospital, and I'm training tonight from 6:30 till 9, and then they've asked me to do a night shift tonight, so I've got to go straight from training to work, and shan't get back till about 7:45 in the morning. Dear.
So you see, he's got just enough time to have, as he said himself, a couple of shredded wheat, and then he'll be back on air again. Isn't that amazing? You know? Only a ninja warrior can actually do that from that perspective. So I think the answer
has... Yes, I wouldn't be able to keep up with that.
Last October, for our birthday, we did a 24-hour ninja-thon, 24 different activities over the 24-hour period. So and that was all the students.
Yeah, well,
wow.
Things to think about, really. Things to possibly celebrate your birthday next week, Hannah. You know, a 24-hour ninja-thon.
Definitely.
It's a thought. Keith, you will return. Take care now.
Much obliged. Tomorrow I'll get the design, master.
You got a famous last name, but you're not to blame. Well, baby, I see you for who you are. One time Queen, and one time tramp, and
being a guest on the Midweek Drive is more than a privilege, an honour, or a life-changing experience. Somehow it's a combination of all three, and an affirmation of one's commitment to excellence in broadcasting, and that goes double for you, dear listener. The Midweek Drive, each Wednesday at 5 p.m. on Siren 107.3 FM, Lincoln's gift to the world.
Well, it's important that is stressed out in all sorts of ways, really. If we're talking about data protection, there is really only one go-to person to go to in many ways as far as the nation is concerned. Over 20 years' experience in corporate law, data protection, and just as I'm actually saying to David, I'll show you all the photographs on Facebook. There could be all sorts of things from that. Hannah, whom could we be referring to?
The one and only Susan Singleton.
Susan Singleton, how are you?
I'm very well indeed.
Excellent. So let's just talk a little bit about that, because as I've said when we spoke a few weeks ago, I was delighted that, thanks not in part to the inspiration that you provided me with, I managed to get my full certificate in terms of the online data protection survey we have to do as a member of staff here at the University of Lincoln, which is great from that point of view. David, is this something which, as Dean of Faculty, you're constantly having to wrestle with, and new directors are coming through, and obviously your time with the BBC as well, presumably data protection was pretty high up there as well?
It certainly was, Alex, and it's so very important to keep abreast of all of the latest legislation and also current practice, because clearly a law is one thing, but then the interpretation and the application of that law is something else. And I think it's a fascinating area, because different companies can interpret things in a different way, and it really pays you to go back to the experts.
Is that something you find, Susan, that it's endlessly fascinating, that you think, well, just as you've got that particular aspect sorted out, suddenly there's something else that comes up, whether it's a new social networking site, whether it's a new detail? Because as you rightly warned us about before, and indeed raised that spectre of ensuring that stuff that goes up that's published, and I'm sure, Hannah, you've heard this in various ways from tutors and so on, that, you know, if you publish it on Facebook, that's going to be there.
Yeah, we've heard that all the time, and Twitter as well. You need to be really careful, particularly like the recent, I think it was Sheffield United case.
Absolutely, yes. The case within that, and obviously the Fabrice Mwamba negative tweet that came around ended up in a jail sentence. Do you ever get the feeling, Susan, that it's just a case of, well, that's it, you know, people will never learn, or do you just think, well, actually, that's what I'm here for?
Certainly an awful lot of guidance from the Information Commissioner's Office. So if anyone really has to look at a particular issue, go to the website of the ICO, and they might well have guidance on that particular issue that you're interested in. So it's always worth looking there. I do think that people have to be very careful what they do tweet and say. They might think it's like a chat in a pub to a friend, but in fact these days you could end up in prison for it. And isn't there, I think there's been an announcement today of a group of MPs lobbying against some wording in legislation which says that just causing trouble, I can't remember the exact phrase, might amount to, we ought to change our law to make it easier to insult people. There should be more of a right to be insulting if we want to, that we've gone far too far, and that the law at the moment even stops comedians making what are quite clearly jokes. Yet we've started arresting people who, when they're going through customs, make some quite clearly just a joke about, I've got a bomb in my bag, and then they get hauled off. So it's really difficult for governments to get the balance right between legislating and keeping our freedoms.
And clearly, David, we're in the business of education. There's something else that's also addressed there, and so we do have to be very careful. Thankfully, I think practices are followed that work through from that basis, but there is that notion you do have to be extremely careful about things that might be apparently... And there's a wonderful phrase that, in fact, our faculty officer, Joy Knight, often uses, which I like to raise at this stage, which is, when you want to reply to an email, sometimes it's best to step away from the keyboard and just let it sit. Because, I'm sure you must get emails like, you must be joking, and there's somebody to actually fire that. And you just have to be a bit careful in terms of responses and so on.
Very much so, Alex, and I think that's really excellent advice from Susan, because actually fundamentally you can't really gauge tone or expression from an email. It's so hard, even if someone uses massive amounts of punctuation and smiley faces, to really understand what's going on behind those words, and that the ease with which people can be offended, even if you didn't mean to offend them, means that that law and the way it's written, which says that there was an intention to offend, and how on earth can you judge whether or not someone was actually setting out to offend someone, or whether it's actually because they were sensitive, perhaps even oversensitive, and were therefore offended? That it's a complete and utter quagmire. So I think it'll be interesting to see where that motion by Peter Tatchell and the MPs goes to, because it's quite a significant thought, I think.
Will it make your life easier, Sue, or will it be a case of, well, I'm in data protection, it's never easy, I get sort of responses all the time, that's my job?
Well, it gets more and more interesting, I think. I would certainly be in favour of the proposal in relation to making, in a sense, it easier to insult people. But that's just my personal view, and it's very, very much a personal matter with data protection. Yeah, I will. There'll be some. My son won't have an Oyster card and won't go on Facebook because he regards that as such a risk of privacy rights, whereas his sisters have virtually lived on Facebook since they were at university. So it's very much a personality thing. Some people are more than happy for information to be out there, and other people see it as something as a huge infringement of their rights. Some people are upset over the slightest little comment, and other people aren't. And it's how does the state get the right balance? But I think the advice to people generally is just be very careful what you write and what you say, and count, as you said earlier, you know, step back, count to 10, keep calm, like our parents told us the years. You know, just keep cool. Don't say what you might otherwise say, because you might regret it later.
Mm-hmm. Hannah, what was your parental advice? I mean, it was the O'Brien household. Was it a case of Facebook? I mean, in fact, how old were you when you started Facebooking?
I think I was 15 or 16 when I started Facebooking. I think it was 2008. Mm. But when I first got Facebook, not many of my friends had it, so I was pretty much one of a kind.
A pioneer in Gloucestershire.
Well, not quite, but I was one of the first ones of my friends to get it. So I think it was a bit different when I first got it. But since I've started my journalism degree, my mum started nagging me more about what I do put on there. And she's told me to be careful about what pictures end up on there as well. And because pictures can affect future careers.
Yeah. That's exactly the point, I think. Very, very much so. We do know now that many, many employers are using Facebook as a way of shortlisting candidates for interview. So people may find in the future that they're puzzled as to why they're not even getting through to interviews for jobs. And actually, there's a whole thing there that they've put out in the public domain about themselves that employers are using to screen them out. And I think, in a way, you know, that's really sad, because actually everyone's entitled to let off steam, particularly when you're young and you're excited and you're first going out to pubs and clubs and whatever. But actually leaving that there in the public domain is a real risk.
Yeah, well, you could argue that it's an infringement of people's privacy by employers looking at it, because everyone's entitled to a private life, and that life doesn't necessarily cross over with work life, does it?
Yeah, in fact, then the courts have said the same, and there have been quite a few employment cases over the years on exactly that point, that, you know, to what extent is what you do in your own time going to have any impact on your work? I think there was a group of postmen who were involved in football hooliganism years ago. The question was, did that really matter? It didn't affect their delivery of the post. But then sometimes people do things that would bring their employer into disrepute. But the other point with Facebook is, you can obviously, I don't have access to my daughter's Facebook pages. They would not want to be seen publicly with someone as embarrassing and old as their mother. So I've no idea what.
Oh, come now, Susan, please.
But it should be quite hard for some HR people to get access to Facebook photographs, which are kept, you know, privately amongst your friends. You don't have to have a public Facebook profile if you don't want to.
Absolutely.
But even so, they often, you know someone that knows you, and they can somehow get access that way.
And of course, there's the reverse of it, which is, if you are in journalism, media, if we're in the cultural industries, to use that global term, part of the whole essence of being is to actually raise profile, even as academics. I've attended seminars, etc., where we're told, academic, what's your Facebook profile? Go and sort it out. Have you been Googled? Sort it through, etc. So that there is that balance as well. Well, again, it's a selection process.
That's true, because I've had a few clients recently, they've started to look for video of me before they will instruct a law firm. So they're looking at articles I've written, the public profile. Mm. They've gone into YouTube, where there are some videos about me, but I'm afraid they're all dull ones. They're about the law. So.
Susan, if you've got a few hours, we can certainly sort. We could jazz it up if required, but a different line. Data, huge amounts about, obviously, to almost sort of just use a very trivial take on the whole thing. But we did have that question, which I passed on, which you answered very effectively, etc. In terms of things going down to companies, CCTV, car registration plates, can details be passed on? What is the situation with respect to CCTV in any case, in terms of how can people from the public, or do people from the public, have the right to access details about, you know, colleagues or work acquaintances just through, you know, the security cameras in a particular organisation?
It's quite difficult, and rightly so, to get access to that. There is a code of practice on the Information Commissioner's website solely about the use of CCTV, and it says things like, where can you position the cameras? I remember giving a course on data protection once, and someone from university, in fact, said they wanted to put them in the ladies' lavatories because
Great.
That's where the drug dealing was taking place. But obviously that's not exactly where the ICO wants the camera to be. They want them to be elsewhere. So there's information on sighting, but your question really, or the question is about the extent to which you could get hold of the footage. So say someone's crashed into your car and you know that it's probably on the CCTV held by the car park. They won't necessarily give it to you, but there is a right under the Act for the police to get access to data. So you might, if there's been a criminal offence, which a car crash might be, the police could make a request, and then there is a right to hand that data over, and you could get it that way. But basically, your CCTV is your personal data. So there was a case last year where people were recorded and then put on YouTube, and the CCTV was put on YouTube, and the Information Commissioner said, no, take it down. Those people have not consented to their activities being shown publicly. You can get your own data, though, so you could ask someone who's recorded CCTV of you to give you access to that data, because that's an ordinary data subject request.
Fascinating. I mean, I do, although not trained in the legal side of things, I do, David, if you'd echo this, but it's fascinating and scary at the same time.
It is, and the complexities when you cross over into the media and then thinking about media ethics and media law is very complex. I have a very good neighbour, a good friend here in Lincoln, who on his CCTV home security system recorded a burglar coming into his house and stealing from his house, and obviously gave the footage to the police, and that helped the police here in Lincoln to apprehend the person. That neighbour was then approached by one of the television companies who wanted to buy the footage to use in one of these police camera action type programmes. And there was this huge long debate about the ethics of that, and once the person had been sentenced for the crime, whether or not the broadcasters could then broadcast it. And in the end, they did. So it has been broadcast. But it's a complex area.
What would your view on that have been, Susan? Would you have said?
Well, I think if you're going to burgle someone's house, you're going to have to live with the fact you might be recorded. I wouldn't be so worried about the Data Protection Act, but I might be being too bullish over that.
I think I can agree with you on that one, to be honest.
Yeah, if you put CCTV in operation, I don't see why not. What I think is really great is when you've got students and others who've got their laptop or other electronic devices set up so that when they're stolen, they can track where they are, and they can also record through a webcam the face of the person who's stolen their laptop. Mm. And I think it's definitely worth putting that sort of thing on your laptop if you can, because it means you can trace where they are and you've got a picture of them.
So clearly, if we'd only had that internal camera when you had that heart-rending, David, story of Hannah and her zombified postscript to the night, etc., which meant you missed out on Phil Leonis's directorial masterclass and presentation of The Truth Is Out There. I mean, just share with us one more time what you went through on that, because I really think this is...
Do I have to, Alex?
Just one more time for Susan's benefit. Go.
I lost my keys on a night. I left them in someone's flat, and I came back from my night out and I couldn't get into my flat.
It happens, happened to me when I was an undergraduate.
Eventually I got into my flat because my flatmates let me in, but then I couldn't get into my room. And I was trying to get into my room all the next day, and it turned out that some other people in my building had gone into my room and covered everything with newspaper and milk cartons.
Please, what do you think this is? Oxbridge, for goodness sakes,
And a bucket of water above my bathroom door, which nearly knocked me out.
You see, and you wouldn't want to have LOL or Roll on the Fourth Floor laughing over that, would you really, Sue? It's enough, really, but still. Thankfully, she's gone through that, and she's now taking up the ninjutsu to actually cope with other things and all sorts of bits and pieces.
Unfortunately, I've lost my keys again.
It'll all be fine. Susan, it's been fantastic as ever, just touching base with you. Good. So, Hannah, have you got any questions you want to ask Sue in terms of life, the universe, or anything else from that point of view?
Sue, what would you say would be like the best way to set up a Facebook account so someone couldn't access your pictures?
I'm not sure I know enough about the technology. I mean, you can set it up so that only those people that are allowed to have access should have access. That's the basic Facebook setting lots of people have, that only your friends have access. But I think it's also important for people to put photographs up that perhaps aren't in the public domain. If you take the main photograph from my website, and you can search it anywhere on the internet on Google Images, and it takes you straight to that. But if you take other photographs of me, it doesn't do that. So I think maybe that would help people too, and just not perhaps put anything up there that's too embarrassing anyway in the first place. That's the safest advice, I think.
Makes perfect sense. Susan Singleton, reminder, of course, singlelaw.com, if you want to actually touch base and find out various other fascinating things there. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive today?
I certainly have, thank you.
Splendid, and can we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future?
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, where do you sit on Matt Munro? That's a silly question. I don't know if you'll ever ask that. Obviously you sit. Are you a Matt Munro fan, Sue?
No.
Well, it's because, I mean, Matt Munro has become a kind of intrinsic part of the Midweek Drive, really, particularly as we approach the sort of 5 to 6 time. And Michelle Munro is currently doing an extended 6-month tour of the whole system. Is all there. And this is the time where, obviously, it's time to press a certain button. And Hannah, which button should we be pressing at this particular time?
The Michelle Munro button.
Hi, it's Michelle Munro here again with another musical postcard from halfway across the world. Today's choice is a song by Harry Warren and Matt Gordon. It was originally recorded by Glenn Miller and his orchestra and featured in the 1941 movie Sun Valley Serenade. The record has since been inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame. This big band classic has not only been recorded by many people over the years, but has seen release in several languages as well. My father's version comes from his 1975 album The Other Side of the Stars, which was produced by John Burgess and arranged by Colin Keyes. Hang on, I think I can hear a train coming. Pardon me, Alex, but is that the Chattanooga Choo Choo?
Pardon me, sir, is that the Chattanooga Choo Choo? Track 29. Well, you can give me a shine. I can afford to board the Chattanooga choo-choo, 'cause I've got my fare and just a trifle to spare. You leave the Pennsylvania station about 3:45, read a magazine and then you're in Baltimore. Dinner in the diner, nothing could be finer than to have your ham and eggs in Carolina. When you hear the whistle blowing 8 to the bar, then you know that Tennessee is not very far. Shovel all the coal in, gotta keep it rolling. Ooh, Chattanooga, there you are. There's gonna be a certain party at the station. Satin and lace, I used to call Funny Face. She's gonna cry until I tell her that